Jimmy Disu. Right, this is the first of the week. Tomorrow, of course, will be Wednesday. That would be Dear Bumi. I have two sisters here. So we'll call it The Tale of Two Sisters. So that's what we'll be doing that tomorrow. And on Thursday, I'm shopping for one or two people, two lawyers, to talk about the developments in the judicial sector, both at the judiciary and at the bar. You remember I told you this morning about the story making the rounds between the chambers of two senior advocates, and I'd like to look at those two issues for tomorrow. Then on Friday, we'll be back again to our business talk that we had last Friday. Now, today, I want us to listen to today's program with a very open mind, okay? Yes, the Ekweremadus have gingered the need for me to have this program, but it is not about them. It is not about them. Therefore, when we open up the lines, I'd like to avoid an argument as to what the Ekweremadus should and or should not have done. What I've done simply, thanks to my good dad in the Lord, who made it possible. What I've simply done is to bring Dr. Ebubangwe, who is a nephrologist. Did I get that? Nephrologist. People can see you nod. He's a nephrologist, is that right?
I am a nephrologist.
Yeah, a nephrologist. You have to move closer to the mic, sir. Yeah, okay. He's a consultant nephrologist and is a clinical director of St. Nicholas Hospital. When I say I say because even as a kid, that's where I got treated and that's where I gave birth, thank the Lord, to my three children. So it's a pleasure to have you here. This is Phil at home. That's the good part. The bad part is that you went to Igbobi College.
Here we go again.
He's an old Igbobian. It's nice to have him here. And so what we are going to be talking about with him is so that we can have some knowledge. You see, I see a lot in the social media, and I see a lot of ignorance. Some people have lost track of what we are talking about, but let's take care of the medical side first. The legal side will be sorted out in the courts. Don't burn time, trying to think about this, whether the boy betrayed this one or that one. But let's even get the medical side. If that's going to be my own contribution, so be it. Dr. Wangwe, you told me one thing that I've been shouting from the rooftops, that we've been doing kidney transplants for close to 22 years.
Not close to, more than 22
years. More than 22 years.
Yes.
In about how many, when I say hospitals, I mean, is it just in Lagos or?
Well, we pioneered it at St. Nicholas Hospital, incidentally.
Okay.
And that was exactly on the 6th of March in the year 2000.
Wow.
So we celebrated 22 years of that earlier in the year,
this year.
But since then, quite a number of other hospitals, and the total count of hospitals that currently do transplants in Nigeria is actually 15.
15?
Yes.
Across the country?
Across the country.
Oh,
Now, majority of them are in public hospitals.
Okay.
Unfortunately, you know the problems that bedevil public hospitals in Nigeria. So you find that most of those hospitals over the years have done, most of them have done less than 10. Some have done just one, some have done two. So most of the
private hospitals. Let me let you run a bit of a commercial here. I mean, I'm just joking. But in St. Nicholas, about how many do you do a year?
Last year, we did almost 50.
Wow.
Transplants, yes.
This year
so far, we've done just about 20.
Can I respectfully ask how successful they were?
Well, if they weren't successful, we wouldn't be doing them. That's the fact.
That is true. You'd have had to stop.
We would have had to stop.
Is it? I know it's a big, surgery would take about how many hours? Four or five?
Well, there are two surgeries. There's the donor surgery and there's the recipient surgery.
That is true. Are they done at the same time?
Now we do them simultaneously, yes.
So the two of them are in the theater. You take
twin theaters. So one team are taking out the kidney. And the other team are preparing the bed of the recipients to receive the kidney. And between the pair, they probably will take about 3-4 hours to complete.
Wow. And the time for recovery is what?
The donor is home by the 3rd, 4th, 5th day max.
Really? And the donor, yes.
The donor goes home earlier. Later is the fifth day, the donor is ready to go home.
Mm.
The recipient normally would leave, let them leave at 2 weeks. Some leave slightly earlier, some leave slightly later.
So you can take a proper look and see.
Yeah.
How do you know if they are compatible before you open them up?
Well, that's the key to the success of any transplant. And that's the bit that the nephrologist, because as the nephrologist, I don't carry out the surgery.
Ah, okay.
But the nephrologist prepares CPR. And merely the transplant is over, he takes over the care of the patient for the rest of that patient's life.
How do you confirm the compatibility?
Now,
do you need to open them up? That's what I'm saying.
No, you don't.
Oh, okay.
There are tests that you do that confirm the suitability of that donor. Mm-hmm. And ensure that that donor is fit enough to undergo the transplant process. Because the last thing you want is for anything to happen to a donor.
Yeah.
So there are various aspects to it. And for us, the key one is the suitability of that donor, both ethically and legally. Then the suitability physically. So you won't take a donor, the donor cannot be less than 18 years by law.
Okay.
Usually, you don't want to take a donor that's over 65 years. If you're going to take a donor that's older than that, there are extensive tests you need to do in such a donor. The donor should not have a disease that could, in future, cause a problem for his one remaining kidney. So you don't accept if the patient is hypertensive or diabetic.
This is the first time I'm going to be knocked out on all counts.
You wouldn't
65
accept.
And above.
Yeah.
Hypertensive and diabetic. Yeah. I'm knocked out completely.
And then, of course, you want to be sure the individual doesn't have an infection that he can pass on to the recipient. So you screen for hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, CMV, syphilis. So the tests you do are quite extensive. And they, in fact, constitute a major part of the costs. But the final bit of the test is to confirm compatibility between the donor and the recipient.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves actually looking at the genetics, the HLA typing of the two. And then you want to be certain that the recipient doesn't have antibodies that will attack a cell coming from the donor. So that's the final test that now determines
compatibility. This could jolly well be done outside the physical jurisdiction of the recipient. I mean, you don't need to have two of them in one place to get that done.
No, you don't.
Let me ask a specific question. So just straight up, like it happened, the recipient is in the UK. Could the test have been done here to determine the suitability?
Well, I'll give you an example. We've had one of our recipients whose donor was a sister who lived in the United States of America.
Okay.
And what we did at that time, we had to send samples to the UK. And we just arranged DHL. We took samples from the recipient in Lagos. The donor took samples, the donor's doctor took samples in the US. They sent it to the UK simultaneously. And they went ahead and did the test.
When siblings are involved, does it make it kind of automatic? Meaning that if, God forbid, if I do need the transplant, I can easily call on my brother.
Unfortunately.
I hope he'll answer me.
Unfortunately.
Call
not.
Of him. It's not that way.
Unfortunately not. The fact that you are siblings does not necessarily confirm compatibility. Because the first of the things you need to be certain that you have in common is that you should be blood group compatible.
Okay. Yes, go on, sir.
Blood group compatible.
Yes.
In the sense that just as with blood transfusions, A can donate to A, B to B. O is a universal donor, can donate to AB, or O. AB is a universal recipient, can accept from anybody, A, B, or O. So that's also important. And you can be siblings and yet have two separate blood groups. So that is important. You must be blood group compatible.
So at least you do have some comparative advantage if you're a sibling.
No, it's always best if you find a compatible sibling that you both share the same
parents,
haplotypes. Oh. And I'll explain that.
Please.
When you have a mother that's AS, a father that's AS. The children can be AA, AS, or SS.
Yes, yes.
So you can have children of the same parents, one of whom is AA and the other one is SS. They're siblings, but genetically they've both inherited separate genes from their parents.
Wow.
So it's quite possible that you have two siblings that are completely genetically disparate.
Okay, now you talked about, but then you said ethically. I'd like you to explain that because I didn't quite catch what you meant before we get to the legal side of things.
Okay, ethically, I happen to belong to a select group of 100 kidney specialists around the world that put together what is known as the Istanbul Declaration. You can Google it. And this was done in Istanbul, incidentally, maybe about 15 years ago now, where the International Society of Nephrology, the Transplant Society, and the WHO met together to try and define what is acceptable,
okay,
ethically. And this is meant to prevent a situation where people are commercializing human parts. So the ethics of medical practice don't allow us to encourage selling of human parts.
So you can't buy kidneys or anything?
You should never do so.
You've
seen instances where individuals have sold one kidney and have come back to sell a second kidney.
How do they survive without a kidney?
And that just shows you the sorts of people that are likely to be the ones that would be vulnerable to such. They're the poor, the illiterate,
yes,
the less endowed parts of the society. And that's what that declaration is trying to ensure, that we prevent, or at least we discourage, commercialization of human parts.
So no surgeon of repute would carry out...
No surgeon of repute will do so.
If he discovers that something has gone down.
Precisely.
How do you... Yes, Reverend Omolulu told me about this. For example, I heard in your hospital you have a board.
Yes, we have an ethics committee.
An ethics committee that looks, so you look at everything to make
sure. I mean, there's some that are clear. If you have siblings.
Yes.
You have a parent.
Yes,
husband and wife. Those are pretty straightforward. So usually those ones will not be referred to a committee. But when it starts getting to cousins and their second cousins, in quote.
Yes.
You're getting to friends. Even though still permissible, you would want an independent body to actually assess that relationship and actually confirm that it is what they claim.
What kind of questions would they be asking them, you know?
Well, I mean, if you're cousins, for instance,
that's okay.
You could ask, okay, where are your parents? Let your mother come. Let's speak with your parents and actually be certain that you say your mothers are sisters. Actually confirm that that is the case. Mm. If you say you've been friends, let's see pictures of the two of you together from whenever it is that you became friends. And not that you became friends just on account of the fact that the guy intended to donate.
Can I ask what might appear to be a dumb question? Why the great concern about, you know, the commercialization of body parts? I mean, where does the concern lie?
The concern lies is that you would be exploiting the poor and less privileged in society.
Ooh.
They're the ones that are more likely looking for money and want to sell their organ parts. Mm. And like I said, instances have occurred. In fact, studies have been done where they've looked at individuals who sold their parts. And three, four, five years later, they've gone ahead and questioned them and said, well, you did so. Would you do it again? And most of them said no. Yeah. Okay, the money you got, what have you done with it? They've gone to buy iPhone. They've bought new clothes. Within 3, 4, 5, 6 months, that money is gone.
That money is gone.
And so, of course, they're now left with just one kidney. And a team that will go ahead and take a kidney from somebody who evidently has commercialized that transaction are less likely to be as careful with ensuring that nothing happens to that donor. In fact, the tests that we do in the donors are so extensive because the last thing you want in a program, in a transplant program, is for something to go wrong with the donor.
With the donor.
Because that's the example everybody's going to look at. Nobody would remember the hundreds of others that went well. It is that one single one that would discourage subsequent donors. So all programs of REPIT would ensure that they extensively investigate that donor to ensure that as a consequence of his going ahead to donate a kidney, nothing happens to him. That's important because that's one thing we keep, you know, each time we're counseling potential donors, reassuring them. That studies have actually been done where they've looked in Finland. They looked at donors over 25 years and followed them up over 25 years. And they found that individuals who donated actually lived longer than those who didn't. People wonder why that should be.
Yeah, that should be, yes.
And my usual question is, why do you think it would be? Some say it's because they're more careful.
I was going to say that, yes.
Some say it's because they've gone into hospital, somebody has evaluated them. Some say it's because God recompenses them. Some people say maybe the doctors are a little more compassionate with them, but that's not the reason why. The reason is that before we accept you as a donor, you're already a healthier person than the average person in the community. So it won't take you if you have hypertension, diabetes, if you have any chronic infections. Your heart must be fine, your liver must be fine, your lungs must be fine. So already you would live longer than the average person in the community.
Anyway, yes.
And by going ahead and giving a kidney, your lifespan is not in any way shortened.
But I think you will agree with me that the younger, the better.
Yes, to a very large extent, yes. But the but there is that, you know, ethically also, you can't have an 80-year-old man who needs a transplant and you go and take a kidney from a 20-year-old. Also, that ethically is not quite right.
Yeah, but it becomes born again in the kidney area. Excuse my pun.
Not the donor.
Not the donor.
The donor now still has a long life ahead,
ahead of him.
And, you know, for him to, I mean, if he's giving it to somebody his age, you can understand both of them can then live. But for an 80-year-old man, I mean, if you look at what the life expectancy is in Nigeria today, it's about 56, 57 years. He has already outlived that. So if he's lucky, lives 10 years, it will be a waste.
Okay. Okay, I've been talking so far till Dr. Bangboye, is a consultant nephrologist and is a clinical director of St. Nicholas Hospital. And we've been talking about kidney transplants. Okay, so we'll take our usual break where some dues are paid. And when we come back, I'll continue my discussion with him. And after that, we'll open up our lines, 0700-993-993-993. When you do call in, it's not about the aquarium mandos. I'll leave them to their privacy. And I will not allow doctor to answer questions directly about them. But you can ask and contribute comments to what is being discussed. I'll be very strict on this because we are talking about people, a situation that is distressful enough as it is. And I'd not like my guest embarrassed professionally in any manner. So we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue with that discussion, so don't go away. Hey, welcome back to the Daily Digest, and I have Dr. Mubangwe here, and we're talking about kidney transplants. Now, you just said off air now that some people are born with one kidney. So I started examining my stomach. I don't know how many I have, but you explained that some develop and so on and so forth. Now, in the case where you do a transplant, it means the two kidneys of the patient have packed up, the two, not one. If one kidney has packed up, do you need to take it out?
Not necessarily. In fact, as a rule, when you do a transplant, you don't take out either of the kidneys of the recipient.
Oh, it's a third kidney.
So you put in a third kidney.
Where would it sit?
It sits in the pelvis, in the front.
Ah.
Whilst the two kidneys are at the back.
Oh, there's space for it, like a spare tire.
In fact, there are, well, that's your main tire.
God is wonderful.
No, the reality is that there are very, very few indications for doing a transplant, for doing a native kidney nephrectomy. If it's cancerous, if it's infected,
okay.
If it's so large, like in polycystic kidneys, that it occupies the space you want to put in the new kidney.
Polycystic is what? So people don't think you're referring to policemen.
No, when there are multiple cysts
I know.
In the kidney, and the kidney is now so large.
So large, yes. I was
no
just
space.
Kidding. Okay, now, so many factors, I guess, lead to kidney failure. And people sometimes can't distinguish as to what would lead to kidney failure as opposed to liver. So we're talking about kidneys.
Okay.
What are the things that actually do lead to kidney failure?
Okay. Many things. But the three top causes of kidney failure are hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
And easily 40 to 50% of adult Nigerians have hypertension.
Yes.
And majority of them who have hypertension don't know they have it.
Sadly
and
so.
And majority of them who know they have it don't know that its treatment is for life.
Mm.
And many of them cannot afford the treatment. Because sometimes just one antihypertensive can cost as much as 10,000.
That's me.
So for the person who is on, who earns 30,000, he's not going to cost out 10,000 too. So that's, by the way, that's hypertension. So it's not surprising that hypertension is one of the more common causes in our environment.
Mm.
Then there's diabetes. Easily 8%, 8.8% of individuals in Lagos area are diabetic.
Yeah.
And in some groups, as much as 30%. So if you're in the affluent, obese, you know, group of individuals, bankers, oil workers,
yes.
You find
hanging
that
out.
The prevalence of diabetes in such groups is much higher. And only half of those who have diabetes know they have it.
Hmm.
And if you don't know and you don't treat, one of the organs that can fail is the kidney.
It's the kidney.
So hypertension, diabetes. And then there's one known as glomerulonephritis. It's a long term, but essentially what it means is that an inflammatory damage is almost like immune, self-inflicted damage to the kidneys. But usually following on chronic infections. So it could be hepatitis. 10% of Nigerians have hepatitis B. Hepatitis C, about 4 to 6%. HIV, about 3 to 4%. So the body's reaction to the presence of those chronic infections eventually leads on to damage of the kidneys. So that's chronic glomerulonephritis. And I actually think that is the commonest cause
in
Nigeria. Because you find that the average age of patients with kidney failure in Nigeria is actually about 42, 43 years. Makes it less likely that essential hypertension will be the cause. Because usually women don't develop hypertension until they're over menopause, mostly.
Yes.
And men usually start about 40 years. And you must have had hypertension poorly controlled for at least 10, 15 years before it would lead on to kidney failure. So if the average age of our patients is about 42 years, then there's something else. And that's where chronic glomerulonephritis comes into play. And that usually causes hypertension. So that's why very often those are misdiagnosed as hypertension. So those are three commonest causes. But there are lots of other causes that I think the public in a program like this need to be aware of. One, I think, is toxic nephropathies. These are people who take all these agumu.
Yes.
Bitters.
Herbal
supplements.
Yes.
All these things we know are toxic. In fact, in Taiwan, the commonest cause of kidney failure is what they call the Chinese herbal nephropathy.
Wow.
That's the commonest cause.
But you
cause.
Do get some of these approved by...
They are. They're sold almost like orthodox drugs.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people, why go and spend thousands buying these drugs? When the same drugs are contained and you can buy them for no more than 500, 600, 1,000 naira. Very often what they do is that they actually add things, additives to it that actually are toxic to the kidneys. So if you can, avoid them.
Really, then, can we have that again? Agbo, bitters,
agumu, herbal supplements, all these, I don't want to call the names. But
yes, I understand.
Things that people sell for thousands, hundreds of thousands of naira. And yet, not only do they not cause any additional...
What about spirits? Excessive intake of spirits?
That will damage your liver.
Oh, okay.
Not the kidneys.
Not the kidneys. Mm-hmm. But the damage anyway.
Yes.
So they should be avoided. But what about things like creams?
Well, I'm coming to that. Because that's the other one would be... And that's why, bless his soul, Professor Oliko Erasom Kuti, whilst he was Minister of Health, actually banned the use of skin lightening creams. Many of them contain heavy metals, particularly mercury. And mercury is, you might say you're applying it on the skin.
Yes.
But the largest organ in the body is actually your skin. And when you apply it all over the body, enough of it gets absorbed and is carried naturally to the kidneys. The kidneys are small. They're no larger than the size of your fist, but they're responsible, or they take on one quarter, 25% of the blood flow from the heart goes to those kidneys for them to be able to subserve their function. So enough of those things get to the kidneys and damage them. So we know that one of the causes of kidney damage is the use of skin lightening creams. And in fact, a study was done by Ulasi and her group in Enugu, where they looked at people who use skin lighteners and people who didn't, and found that the prevalence of kidney failure amongst those who use the skin lighteners was much, much higher. Then, of course, the use of analgesics. So all these non-steroidals, diclofenac, ibuprofen.
More so if you already
have some damage to the kidneys from hypertension, diabetes, or any other thing. If you use those non-steroidals, your kidneys are finished.
Wow.
So, but even paracetamol. I can tell you, if you use enough of paracetamol, if you take twice a day, every day, for 2 years, your kidneys will also become damaged.
Also, there's one, you know, I won't mention the brand name, in the powder form, a lot of guys who drink.
What they do is they go and ask for ashakpo.
Yes.
They go to the chemist, and ashakpo is two of this. They put everything together and take. They're just looking for damage to the. There's an entity known as analgesic nephropathy. And up to recently, it was one of the more common causes of kidney failure in Australia. Then, of course, you know, sickle cell disease, we know. There's the polycystic kidneys that we mentioned. And these are genetically derived damage to the kidneys. And then things that cause obstruction. So things like fibroids, things like prostate.
Oh, really? Fibroids?
Like stones, yes, also yes. Can lead on to kidney failure.
Kidney failure. This is frightening. Why did I ever call you?
But the other point which I should also use this opportunity to speak about is the fact that we as black people are 4 times more prone to kidney failure than any other racial group.
Kilati?
We inherit a gene known as the apolipoprotein 1 gene. The
hippopotamus gene, what is it called?
Apolipoprotein 1 gene, APOL1. So it's a gene that originally was supposed to protect us from trypanosomiasis, sleeping sickness. Now, sleeping sickness no longer exists. It has been eradicated.
Glad to hear that.
But those who inherit that gene, so anyone who lived in the area where trypanosomiasis was common, is more likely to inherit that gene. You are 4 times more likely to develop kidney failure if you have any of the conditions that lead on to it. So if you look at the statistics in the UK, look at the statistics in the US, blacks are 4.2 times more likely than Caucasians to develop kidney failure in the US. Afro-Caribbeans are 3.8 times more likely than Caucasians in the UK. So we know that just being black on its own, and the studies have actually been done in the West African sub-region, and you find that the prevalence of kidney failure in this environment is about 16.5%. That means 1 out of every 7 of us have some stage of kidney failure or the other. And it's because that is where the largest prevalence of this apolipoprotein 1 gene exists. So for the homozygous, those who have inherited the G1, G1, or the G2, G2, they're about 46% of the population. Those who carry just one half of the gene are another 46%. So 92% of us have some form or partial inheritance of the apolipoprotein 1 gene.
Okay, yeah, this program is on, of course, you know, it's on YouTube and Facebook Live, and you can always go play it back. You might need to play it back so that all these things, hippopotamus, whatever it is,
apolipoprotein 1,
you write them down as prayer points to give to your pastor on Sunday. So it's number one, the hippopotamus, and all those kind of things. But essentially, all of us are a ticking time bomb. Am I right?
That's the truth.
Essentially, to cut out the crap and cut out the jokes, We are all like a walking time bomb. And I think those things that constitute a danger that can be avoided should. I've always had a quarrel with people on this Agbo thing, and they say, okay, I took it and I'm well. I say, yes, that might be it, but you don't know what else.
What damage?
And that's because Agbo itself has no measurement. That's the least of it all. And bitters, too, the same thing. But I'm wondering why the government has have allowed these things go on.
I think it's not just in Nigeria, even in the US. The lobby for those who sell all these multivitamins and herbal supplements is so strong. And that's why, you know, one is hoping that even the Senate in the US at some point would legislate against it. But because...
Big industry. Yeah,
The herbal supplement industry in America is about $400 and something billion. So all they have to donate, dedicate is just $1 billion of that.
I mean, I was...
to ensure that they continue to sustain themselves.
Okay. Just about 3 weeks ago, I was watching American TV and the commercials kept coming at you, you know, on these herbal supplements. It kept coming at every left, right, and center. It just kept
And the reality is that none of these herbal supplements work. None of them. Ginkgo biloba, saw palmetto, all these things that are marketed as being... Studies have actually been done that have scientifically proven that they have no advantage.
Mm.
Even vitamins. I mean, if you eat an averagely balanced diet, you don't really need...
Even vitamin C that we keep popping in our mouths.
Even vitamin C. The only thing is that it won't harm you. So that's why...
Is harmless. Yes. Thank God. I like popping that in my mouth. Partly because it's sweet. And excuse to take some sugar. Okay. We're going to open up our lines now. And like I said, I can see our lines are buzzing, so we won't have much time to waste. So if you do, just give your name and let's hear what you have to say. We'll take the first caller of the day. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, sir.
Morning.
Good morning, sir. This is Mr. Pius from VI, sir.
Yes, please go on.
Yeah, a job well done to your guests in the studio. Very, very educative, informative. I want to ask about kidney donation. Is there any spiritual... effect to eat for donating a kidney to somebody?
You want to, you want like to ask? Yeah. You want to ask a doctor if there's something spiritual?
I believe that he's a Christian.
That's your belief. That's your belief. This gentleman, the gentleman here, is a doctor. I don't want mischief makers to misquote him on Twitter. So the question is ruled irrelevant. Okay. That's a joke, but the reality is that he's a medical doctor, and I don't think asking him question on whether it's spiritual has to do with individual beliefs, and I'm trying so hard. I please note, and I have no apologies, I'm giving extra protection to my guest because it was magnanimous of him to come and explain this in the middle of this big controversy that we have. Okay, so I'm going to have to protect him and overruled. That's how they say in court. I don't have a hammer to put down. Okay, let's take another one. Hello, good morning.
Oh, thank God you picked that call. Hi, doctor, thank you for coming.
Yes.
A quick one, please. I really like to know, because since you said most of us are actually hypertensive in this part of the country, so what do we actually need to take to protect? What kind of food should we take to protect our kidney?
Okay.
That's what I want. Thank you.
I think that's an excellent question.
Yes.
And like I said, hypertension is very common. Most women will develop hypertension after menopause. And ultimately, you find that more women than men actually do have hypertension. Hypertension, aside from the fact that it's genetic, so if both parents are hypertensive, the likelihood you'll get it is 60%. If one parent is, it's 50%. If a sibling is, it's 40%. But then there are other genetic and there are other environmental factors that play on that. So if you're overweight, so that's one key thing that you should try and do. Ensure that you lose weight. And your BMI, try and keep it within the acceptable limit of between 20 and 25. But certainly not to the obese range. So if you're overweight, lose weight. And that means quantity of food, frequency of eating, type of food that you eat. Secondly, you should reduce the amount of salt that you take. The type of hypertension we have in our own environment is known as the volume-dependent hypertension, in the sense that you tend to retain salt, and with the salt you retain water. And that's why you find that the types of drugs that work for us as black people is slightly different from the ones that work for Caucasians.
Hmm.
So you need something that gets rid of that extra salt and water. Yeah. So if you can prevent excess salt and water, it's also important. And in our environment, we take too much salt. Yes. And recognize that it's not just salt. All your, is it sodium glutamate or whatever you call these seasonings that you put
seasonings,
in.
Yes.
All those things contain salt. There's salt in bread. There's salt in almost everything that you eat. So the thing is, and they found that on average, you probably take about between 10 and 12 grams of salt per day.
Really?
And meanwhile, you don't need more than 2.4.
Hmm.
So the thing to do is to reduce the salt in your diet, but don't do it drastically. So you go from 12 to 10 to 8 to 6, and by the time you come down to 2.4, you won't even notice.
I think the best place to start is don't reach out for that salt bowl to add
to what is there.
If you start from there.
Then, of course, try and exercise. I'm talking about the three things that we know help with control of blood
pressure.
Weight loss, low salt, moderate exercise.
Okay. All our lines are buzzing. Doctor, you're breaking the lines. Hello, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Yeah, greetings, doctor. My name is Dambaba.
Yes, Dambaba.
I've been thinking, because since we are all in trouble, but my question is, doctor, what can we eat to protect our kidney? Why you recommend those foods? Don't forget that a lot of food in our market today are poisonous. So where do we go from here, sir?
I think the key thing is eat fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Most food that are preserved with salt. So you can be sure that there will be excess salt
in it.
And there are also other preservatives which may be toxic to the kidney. Also, don't take too much protein. Strangely enough.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Beans and things? Meat?
More so if you already have some degree of damage to the kidney, if you're diabetic, hypertensive. You need to be careful with how much protein you take. So don't go and take a kilo of steak or take a whole chicken.
Hey, well done, steak. Yeah.
Just take one or two. But the fortunate thing is that the average diet in our own environment is a low-protein diet.
Okay.
You only take one or two pieces of meat with each meal. Which is quite different from what the
Kenyans, Russia, where they eat is one leg of lamb and
or a Big Mac in America.
Yes. Okay, we'll take one or two more calls, then we'll be out of here. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, go on.
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is Madam Ishin.
Okay, please go ahead.
In fact,
please go on.
I'm so happy that all these things you've read out in the last 50 minutes is very, very advantageous to me, you know. And truly, when a woman reaches menopause, boom, all kinds of things start cropping up from the body, which I'm a victim. Now, you are not telling us not to eat beans, not to eat too much protein. And we are diabetic. They will tell you eat enough protein and vegetable. So how do we do it? And our protein here is mainly beans. Egg, fish.
I haven't said you shouldn't eat those
protein,
things.
No, I didn't say you should. I didn't say you.
Eat it in moderation.
Yeah, in moderation. Yes. I retract that.
Yeah, just eat it in moderation. So, more so, if you've been told already that there's something wrong with the kidneys, I think you need to be.
You need to be careful.
A little more careful.
Fortunately, a week ago, I did a comprehensive check. Nothing is wrong with my kidney, even though I've been managing myself
the last 10 years.
Yes.
That's
I'm so happy.
Okay,
you know.
Okay, madam, thank you very much. We'll take another caller. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, sir.
Morning, my friend. How are you? Who's calling?
Fine, sir. My name is Dayo.
Yes,
I really want to appreciate you for this program and your guest.
Thank you.
Okay, now, a quick one, sir. I want to confirm. Concerning the hepatitis B or C you talked about, if somebody is being, goes for screening and primary B such is infected, okay? For how long, what are the, is it, number one, is it curable? Then to what extent could that even affect the kidney? Then this last one, sir, because of our time, the last one is that,
okay, sorry, your one minute is up, please. We don't have much time. Please go on.
So about the hepatitis,
yes.
Like I said, at least 10%, depending on the studies that you're quoting, hepatitis actually affects the liver. and the likelihood of kidney failure and kidney cancer is high. Mm. But because of the immunologic response to it, it can also affect the kidney. So in that case, what you should do is see your doctor.
Okay.
And there's treatment for it.
Okay. A lot of you have questions, really. There's not much the doctor can tell you. What you need, the habit you need to get into, is to go for proper checkups regularly. Finally, how long would a donor have to wait before... How long would a patient have to wait to get a donor? Or you don't source for donors on behalf of...
No, absolutely not.
So the responsibility...
The responsibility is that of the recipient, and it has to be somebody who is either genetically or emotionally related to him.
So is it a crime in Nigeria to buy a kidney
we
or
now
to
have,
induce somebody?
We do have laws now. The National Health Bill, or Health Act, actually prescribes penalties for those who buy and sell. But our concern as nephrologists is that the penalties are not severe enough.
What's the penalty here?
For the person who sells is 1 million naira.
Okay.
So what he
fine.
Does is that he will just add the 1 million to whatever he's asking for. And then, for solid organs.
Correct me if I'm wrong, in the UK it's life imprisonment.
I would.
I checked it online and I saw something like life imprisonment. But there seems to be more severity in that environment than here. 1 million is nothing.
Well, that's what, as an association, we've tried to make representation to government. And the good thing is that Lagos State is coming out with its own law, which is a little more prescriptive. And one hopes that when that comes to be, it will, prescribe slightly more severe penalties that would discourage people from going ahead with this.
And that in any case, any medical practitioner involved might jolly well lose his license.
Oh, certainly, yes.
Okay, Doc, thank you very much. I'm sorry I had to drag you away from your patients and the hospital at a very short notice. I'd like to thank you very much. I'd like to pay my regards also to Reverend Omolulu for his concern on this matter. I can't thank you enough, sir. A box of chocolates coming up when Auntie's not around. That's where we'll end it for today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Tomorrow is Dear Bumi. And I have two sisters coming in. And then, of course, I told you about Thursday. Go out there, enjoy the rest of your week. But don't go away. Are you back again at 10 o'clock? We have roundtable. Yes. Oh, forgive me. This man has said, Sherif has said I'm an ancestor. So I've lost track of them. Don't go away. That famous roundtable, I'm going home to put my feet up and listen to this roundtable. It's going to go on for like 2 hours. About 2 hours, yes. I won't be participating because, let me quickly explain before people start insinuating things, I just feel that I've become so much of an ancestor, I'd rather leave younger people to express themselves so that I'm not an Emiloko person. I believe in live and let live. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9. Bye.
99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info.